This is Audible.
Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Mergers and Acquisitions from A to Z, 4th edition, by Andrew J. Sherman. Narrated by Eric Martin. Introduction to the 4th edition. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. When Dickens first shared this quote with the world, he was not referring to the current state of the merger and acquisitions, M&A, markets, but he might as well have been. In the time between the publication of the 3rd edition of this book in 2010 and today, the overall financial market and the levels of M&A activity have experienced both polar opposites and everything in between. From the seemingly insatiable appetite for middle-market companies that private equity firms and other buyers had in 2006 and 2007, thereby driving valuations through the roof, to the fast ending to the party and the sobering effects of a virtual halt in 2008 to 2009, sending valuations on a downward spiral, to the tepid economic recovery and GDP growth from 2012 to 2016, this was not a good time if you prefer merry-go-rounds to roller coaster rides at the amusement park. According to Merger Market, there were 17,369 deals announced worldwide in 2016 and 4,951 deals in the United States, with a total value of $3.25 trillion. These figures represent a wide variety of industries driven by a wide range of strategic and financial buyers, with the biggest deal of the year being AT&T's proposed high-profile acquisition of Time Warner for over $100 billion, which at the time of publication had been challenged by the Department of Justice, late 2017. Merger and acquisition activity in the United States increased slightly in terms of the number of deals from the first quarter of 2017, the total deal value being 3,554 deals worth $678 billion, an 8.9% increase over Q1 of 2016. In January of 2017, the value of M&A deals worldwide for the month totaled $280 billion, the second largest January for M&A on record. But things began to cool as the reality of the challenges to implementing the economic and tax aspects pieces of the Trump agenda began to set in. By mid-year 2017, global M&A deals were at $1.59 trillion, down well over 15% from 2016 deals at the half-year point. Mergers and acquisitions are a vital part of both healthy and weak economies, and are often the primary way in which companies are able to provide returns to their owners and investors. Mergers and acquisitions play a critical role in both sides of this cycle, enabling strong companies to grow faster than their competition and providing entrepreneurs with rewards for their efforts, while ensuring that weaker companies are more quickly swallowed, or worse, made irrelevant through exclusion and ongoing share erosion. Mergers and acquisitions have played a variety of roles in corporate history, ranging from the greed-is-good corporate raiders buying companies in a hostile manner and breaking them apart in the 1980s, to today's trend of using mergers and acquisitions for strategic growth and to foster industry consolidation. During the 1980s, nearly half of all U.S. companies were restructured, more than 80,000 were acquired or merged, and over 700,000 sought bankruptcy protection in order to reorganize and continue operations. The 1980s featured swashbucklers and the use of aggressive tactics to gain control over targets. The 1990s were equally dynamic in terms of companies evolving through upsizing and growth, downsizing, roll-ups, divestitures, and consolidation, but focused on operational synergies, scale efficiencies, increases in customer bases, strategic alliances, market share, and access to new technologies. This period, however, came to a crashing end with the bursting of the tech bubble and the global recession that followed. The wave of M&A activity seen from 2004 to 2007 was driven by the more general macroeconomic recovery and several key trends. First, many companies had exhausted cost-cutting and operational efficiencies as a means of increasing profitability and were looking to top-line growth as a primary enabler of shareholder return. The increased pressure to grow turned the spotlight on the opportunity to achieve growth through acquisition. Second, the M&A market had been supported by the return of corporate profits and with them improved stock price valuation. The improved valuations enabled corporations to leverage their internal currencies to acquire target companies that were willing to swap their illiquid private stock for valuable public company shares. Third, interest rates were hovering at historical lows, enabling firms to cost-effectively utilize debt to finance acquisition-based growth. From 2008 to late 2009, the wave of M&A activity was driven by weak economic conditions around the globe. The strong, cash-rich companies and firms began bargain shopping, picking off distressed and downtrodden competitors at a fraction of their market value compared to expectations just a short 12 to 18 months earlier. Today, many large and mid-sized companies have begun to refocus on their core business lines, triggering divestitures and spin-offs of underperforming divisions or subsidiaries. Private equity firms and even hedge funds, under pressure to provide returns to their limited partners, have turned stepchild investments into small buckets of cash in order to hold off a tyranny or management overthrow. Yet, although so many dollars have been changing hands, the number of readily available resources for business executives and professional advisors to turn to for strategic and legal guidance on mergers and acquisitions remains very limited. This book is intended to be such a resource. There is no more complicated transaction than a merger or acquisition. The various issues raised are broad and complex, from valuation and deal structure to tax and securities laws. The industries affected by this rapid activity are also diverse, from banking and computer software companies to retailers and healthcare organizations. It seems that virtually every executive in every major industry faces a buy or sell decision at some point during her tenure as leader of the company. In fact, it is estimated that some executives spend as much as one-third of their time considering merger and acquisition opportunities and other structural business decisions. As we will see in the chapters to follow, the strategic reasons for considering such transactions are also numerous, from achieving economies of scale to mitigating cash flow risk via diversification to satisfying shareholders' hunger for steady growth and dividends. The degree to which the federal government intervenes in these transactions varies from administration to administration, depending on the issues and concerns of the day. During the Reagan-Bush years, the government took a passive role, generally allowing market forces to determine whether a given transaction would have an anti-competitive effect. During the Clinton years, regulatory bodies took a more proactive approach, with more intervention by the U.S. Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission, such as a refusal to provide the necessary approval for the proposed merger of Staples and Office Depot in mid-1997. The second Bush administration took a more laissez-faire approach, only to have the European Union take a more aggressive role in preventing potentially anti-competitive mergers. The European Competition Commission's landmark rejection of GE's proposed acquisition of Honeywell in 2001 signified a shift in the role that the EU played in the global M&A marketplace. Under the Obama administration, we saw an increase in antitrust and regulatory oversight, but also experienced an anxiousness to facilitate transactions that will be beneficial from an economic recovery perspective. Transactions such as AT&T Time Warner were approved, yet the DraftKings FanDuel and Walgreens Rite Aid transactions failed to secure antitrust approval. Under the Trump administration, we are likely to see a Bush-like approach to M&A approvals and some regulatory and tax reform that will directly and indirectly impact M&A activity. Recent years since the publication of the third edition have seen upticks in cross-border transactions, aggressive acquisitions by private equity, strategic tech and social media consolidations, and participation in a wide variety of industries. What can we learn and what can we predict about the future when we observe transactions as diverse as Microsoft buys LinkedIn for $26.2 billion in 2016. Facebook buys WhatsApp for $19.5 billion in 2014 and buys Instagram in 2012 for $1 billion. Google buys Motorola's patent portfolio for $13 billion in 2012. Apple buys Dr. Dre's Beats Music for $3 billion in 2016. Priceline buys OpenTable for $2.6 billion in 2014. Sycamore Partners Private Equity acquired control of retailer Staples for $6.9 billion in June of 2017. Amazon buys Whole Foods in June of 2017 for $13.4 billion, sending ripples of fear and concern throughout the retail and grocery industries as to what's next for Amazon and its already well-established online retail dominance. DuPont and Dow announce a merger in December 2015 that was expected to finally close in late 2017 to create a $150 billion chemical and industrial behemoth, and soon thereafter Huntsman, the political family, corporation, and Clariant merge to create a $14 billion chemical giant and drive over $300 million in cost savings. Defense contractors were active in 2017 in anticipation of Trump administration upticks in budget, with Northrop buying Orbital ATK for $7.5 billion, and United Technologies merging with Rockwell at a deal valued at over $20 billion. Yahoo sells the bulk of its assets to Verizon for $4.48 billion in 2017, and spins off other strategic assets to newly created Altaba, whose shares climbed in the summer of 2017. High Times magazine is sold to a group of private investors led by Adam Levin and Damian Marley, Bob's son, for $70 million, as the legalization of marijuana in many states has led to a surge of interest in its content and readership. Medical supply manufacturer Becton, Dickinson & Company announced plans in May 2017 to buy rival CR Board for $24 billion, and in a similar transaction, Actelcon was sold to Johnson & Johnson for $31.4 billion. Both deals fetched much higher than usual valuations for transactions in this industry. Longtime rivals QVC and Home Shopping Network agreed to merge in July of 2017 to drive efficiencies and synergies in an all-stock transaction valued at $2.1 billion. Both companies cited a need to stay competitive with Amazon among their reasons for doing the deal. Cabela's agrees to sell to rival Bass Pro Shops in 2016 for $4.2 billion, creating an outdoorsman and outfitters that will have a significant market share and brands in specialty retailing. 7-Eleven acquires the Sunoco chain of gas stations in 2016 for $3.3 billion in a classic vertical integration transaction that will strengthen both brands as co-branded locations roll out aggressively in 2018 to 2020. Reckitt Benckiser Group, UK, acquires Mead Johnson Nutrition for $16.6 billion in 2017, as it considers the sale of its own food division that includes the French's mustard brand, which spice maker McCormick recently bid $4.2 billion to acquire. Technology and government contract services giant Computer Sciences Corporation, CSC, merges with a spin-off of Hewlett-Packard to create a $25 billion combined entity. Nestle pursues upscale retail concepts in buying Blue Bottle coffee shops in 2017 to compete in part with the Starbucks rollout of its high-end Reserve brand of coffee bars. JAB Holdings, a growing chain of coffee and breakfast concepts, buys bakery cafe chain Panera Bread Company for $7.5 billion. Burger King buys Popeyes for $1.8 billion in early 2017, and Arby's owner Rourke Capital buys Buffalo Wild Wings restaurant chain for $2.9 billion in late 2017. Honeywell is buying Evoca to expand its water technologies offering for $3.6 billion, at the same time it's spinning off its aerospace division as it shifts pieces around the strategic chessboard. Standard Life and Aberdeen Asset Management join forces in Europe to create a $4.7 billion money management and financial services firm. Leidos acquires the IT services division of Lockheed Martin in 2016 for $4.6 billion. MBE Worldwide buys its rival franchisor PostNet in May 2017 to create a combined specialty retailer with more than 3,200 locations in more than 30 countries. Coach reaches out to a younger, hipper target demographic customer as it acquires rival Kate Spade for $2.4 billion in May of 2017. Janitorium and building services conglomerate ABM Industries buys rival GCA Services for $1.25 billion in July of 2017 to further strengthen its market share and range of commercial services. Payment processing and financial services conglomerate Vantiv acquires rival Worldpay Group PLC, UK, for $10 billion in July of 2017. Single-family home Landlords Invitation Homes and Starwood Waypoint Homes announced a $4.3 billion merger in August of 2017, which combined would create an entity with over 82,000 homes for rent in over a dozen major cities. The primary impact of the deal was to create efficiencies as foreclosure sales and bargain home prices become scarcer. VF Corp, the owner of clothing brands North Face and Timberland, announced plans to buy Williamson Dickey Manufacturing for $820 million in August of 2017 to expand its clothing and underwear brands. Dickies is an established career apparel branch, which competes with Carhartt and Duluth Trading Company. Kellogg is diversifying its breakfast snack offerings by buying protein bar maker RX Bar for $600 million in October of 2017. Facebook buys virtual reality equipment maker Oculus in 2014 for $2 billion, with an eye on the rapidly growing VR market. By 2017, its bet had more than paid off as VR hardware was among the hottest products in consumer electronics, with Microsoft, HTC, and Samsung all playing catch-up to Oculus. Discovery Communications acquires Scripps Networks, including the Food Network and HGTV, for over $11 billion in August 2017 to drive a consolidation in content and channel programming. But not all deals planned came to fruition, either due to antitrust or regulatory concerns, loss of transactional momentum, or shifts in the marketplace. Kraft Heinz's attempted takeover of Unilever for $143 billion in 2016 ran out of gas. The Walgreens-Rite Aid merger derailed due to antitrust concerns in mid-2017, though Rite Aid did ultimately agree to sell 2,186 out of its total 4,600 shares to Walgreens for $5.18 billion, ending over 2 years of negotiations. Healthcare giant Anthem terminated its plan to acquire rival Cigna for $54 billion in May of 2017, citing legal, regulatory, and shareholder approval challenges. The fantasy sports company merger between DraftKings and FanDuel was called off in early 2017, as neither company was confident that it could overcome antitrust challenges to the deal filed by the Federal Trade Commission in late 2016. And Abercrombie & Fitch shelved its talks with potential suitors in July of 2017 when retailer valuation concerns failed to produce viable offers from Express, American Eagle, and others. It was especially challenging for Abercrombie to fetch a reasonable valuation when many of their rivals, including Wet Seal, American Apparel, and Aeropostale, had filed for bankruptcy in the previous 12 months. And many deals failed to meet strategic expectations and cratered on a post-closing basis, such as Starbucks's decision to close all 379 Teavana stores in July of 2017 after paying $620 million for the tea specialty stores in 2012. A wide variety of M&A trends are emerging that will probably predict the next 5 to 7 years of activity through 2025, or at least through the publication of the fifth edition. These include: the Trump effect of the 2016 election has caused massive uncertainty in the markets, leading many executives to sit on the sidelines as they await clarity and actions on tax reform, trade barriers, health care reform, infrastructure spending, immigration reform, and foreign policy. China is not going away anytime soon as an acquirer and cross-border dealmaker, as its economy slowly creeps toward capitalism. Several estimates are that up to $1.5 trillion will be allocated to cross-border M&A over the next 10 years, 2018 to 2028. The aging of the baby boomers and rise of the millennials will trigger the greatest intergenerational wealth transfer in the history of mankind, in many cases via M&A, estimated at over $40 trillion over the next 20 years, according to the latest report by MassMutual. Cash stockpiles swelled to $10-plus trillion worldwide by the fall of 2017, as cash sitting in thousands of corporate treasuries sat on the sidelines in search of reasonable yield in returns. Recent years have also seen a significant increase in merger and acquisition activity within industries that are growing rapidly and evolving overall, such as healthcare, information technology, education, infrastructure, and software development, as well as in traditional industries such as manufacturing, consumer products, and food services. Many of these developments reflect an increase in the number of strategic buyers and a decrease in the amount of leverage used, implying that these deals were being done because they made sense for both parties, which is very different from the highly leveraged, financially driven deals of the late 1980s. The small to middle market transactions have clearly been the focus of this book in each of its editions since the 1990s. Fortunately for this audience, middle market transactions continue to attract compelling valuations. Companies in the small to middle market segment need to understand the key drivers of valuation, since they are often able to focus their operating goals in order to maximize the potential valuation range. Therefore, it is important to know that the multiple a company achieves for its business is directly correlated with the following seven characteristics. 1. Strong revenue growth. 2. Significant market share or a strong niche position. 3. A market with barriers to entry by competitors. 4. A strong management team. 5. Strong, stable cash flow. 6. No significant concentration in customers, products, suppliers, or geographic markets. 7. Low risk of technological obsolescence or product substitution. Successful mergers and acquisitions are neither an art nor a science, but a process. In fact, regression analysis demonstrates that the number one determinant of deal multiples is the growth rate of the business. The higher the growth rate, the higher the multiple of cash flow that the business is worth. A study of deals that close with both buyer and seller satisfied shows that those deals largely followed a sequence, a pattern, a series of steps that have been tried and tested. This book focuses on conveying this process to the listeners as we seek to understand the objectives of both buyer and seller in chapters 2 and 3, move through the process of negotiations and closing in chapters 4 through 11, and focus on closing and beyond in chapters 12 through 15. For example, when a deal is improperly valued, one side wins big while the other loses big. By definition, a transaction is a failure if it does not create value for shareholders, and the easiest way to fail, therefore, is to pay too high a price. To be successful, a transaction must be fair and balanced, reflecting the economic needs of both buyer and seller, and conveying real and durable value to the shareholders of both companies. Achieving this involves a review and analysis of financial statements, a genuine understanding of how the proposed transaction meets the economic objectives of each party, and a recognition of the tax, accounting, and legal implications of the deal. A transaction as complex as a merger or acquisition is fraught with potential problems and pitfalls. Many of these problems arise either in the preliminary stages, such as forcing a deal that shouldn't really be done, such as some couples were just never meant to be married, as a result of mistakes, errors, or omissions owing to inadequate, rushed, or misleading due diligence, through not properly allocating risks during the negotiation of the definitive documents, or because integrating the companies after closing became a nightmare. These pitfalls can lead to expensive and protracted litigation unless an alternative method of dispute resolution is negotiated and included in the definitive documents. This book is designed to share the pitfalls of such transactions, with the hope that buyers and sellers and their advisors can avoid these problems in their future transactions. Finally, with merger and acquisition activity continuing to grow at rapid rates, and entrepreneurs and venture capitalists continuing to form new entities and pursue new market opportunities, it is critical to have a firm grasp of the key drivers and inhibitors of any potential deal. With so much money on the line, it is essential to understand how to maximize price and valuation goals while ensuring that the transaction is successfully consummated. Andrew J. Sherman, Washington, D.C., Fall 2017. Chapter 1. The Basics of Mergers and Acquisitions. Over the past few decades, we have seen countless examples of companies, such as Amazon, Facebook, General Electric, Google, and Cisco, that have grown dramatically and built revenues through aggressive acquisition programs. Seasoned executives and entrepreneurs have always searched for efficient and profitable ways to increase revenues and gain market share. The typical strategic growth options are as follows: organic, inorganic, or by external means. Examples of organic growth are hiring additional salespeople, developing new products, and expanding geographically. The best example of inorganic growth is an acquisition of another firm, something that is often done to gain access to a new product line, customer segment, or geography. Finally, external revenue growth opportunities include franchising, licensing, joint ventures, strategic alliances, and the appointment of overseas distributors, which are available to growing companies as an alternative to mergers and acquisitions as a growth engine. This book discusses the benefits of organic versus other forms of growth. This book also focuses primarily on mergers and acquisitions, M&A, as a means of growing, although toward the end of the book, certain external means are explored as well. M&A Basics, Buy versus Build. At the heart of all decisions regarding mergers and acquisitions, regardless of the global financial crisis, is a fundamental question. Are we better off buying a new capability, market entry, customer base, earnings opportunity, and so on, or attempting to build it ourselves? The dedication of financial and human resources to organize growth must be based on long-term sustainable value creation for the company's stakeholders, but achieving this objective through growth may require a high level of patience and may result in some lost opportunities. The allocation of resources to M&A will tend to expedite the achievement of growth objectives, but it also increases the level of risk if deals are not structured and negotiated properly. What variables should a growing company consider in striking the right balance between organic growth, build, and mergers and acquisitions, buy? These include the competitiveness, fragmentation, and pace of your marketplace and your industry, your access to and cost of capital, the specific capabilities of your management and advisory teams, the strength and growth potential of your current core competencies, the volatility and loyalty of your distribution channels and customer base, the degree to which speed to market and scale are critical in your business, including typical customer acquisition costs and time frames, the degree to which your company operates in a regulated industry. Understanding key terms. The terms merger and acquisition are often confused or used interchangeably. It is important to understand the difference between the two. A technical definition of the words from David L. Scott in Wall Street Words, an A to Z guide to investment terms for today's investor, is as follows. Merger, a combination of two or more companies in which the assets and liabilities of the selling firm or firms are absorbed by the buying firm. Although the buying firm may be a considerably different organization after the merger, it retains its original identity. The merger of equals between XM and Sirius to form Sirius XM is an example. Acquisition. The purchase of an asset such as a plant, a division, or even an entire company. For example, Oracle's acquisition of Sun Microsystems was a significant technology transaction in 2009. On the surface, this distinction may not really matter, since the net result is often the same. Two companies, or more, that had separate ownership are now operating under the same roof, usually to obtain some strategic or financial objective. Yet, the strategic, financial, tax, and even cultural impact of a deal may be very different depending on the type of transaction. A merger typically refers to two companies joining together, usually through the exchange of shares, as peers to become one. An acquisition typically has one company, the buyer, that purchases the assets or shares of another, the seller, with the form of payment being cash, the securities of the buyer, or other assets that are of value to the seller. In a stock purchase transaction, the seller's shares are not necessarily combined with the buyer's existing company, but are often kept separate as a new subsidiary or operating division. In an asset purchase transaction, the assets conveyed by the seller to the buyer become traditional assets of the buyer's company, with the hope and expectation that, over time, the value of the assets purchased will exceed the price paid, thereby enhancing shareholder value as a result of the strategic or financial benefits of the transaction. Refer to the cyclical nature of mergers and acquisitions for a better understanding of the M&A cycle. Large corporations are acquiring strategic targets with the aim of attaining goals that they could not have achieved prior to the credit crisis and the resulting lower valuations. It was an opportune moment for Bank of America to acquire Countrywide for a significantly low value and increase its market share in the mortgage industry. A few of the Wall Street banks were acquired in 2008 on fears of impending liquidation or bankruptcy, and by 2016 were rewarded for their risks. Look how nicely the public bank stocks had recovered by the end of 2017. However, the essential characteristic of these deals, which have attracted extensive media coverage, is that the target entities would ideally have preferred not to be acquired. Protection-driven and risk allocation-driven deal terms are more hotly contested. A notable trend has emerged in recent times where the participants in the voluntary, if you will, deals are mainly mid-sized businesses. These so-called middle-market transactions utilize bank debt, which is available, although at a higher cost and in tougher circumstances than previously. Thomson Financial reports that there were more than $10 billion in U.S. mid-cap private equity deals in the early part of 2016. Efficient companies that have not been exposed to the subprime hullabaloo are preferred targets for financiers, perhaps also because they have simpler balance sheets and a realistic revenue stream. Indeed, the circumstances under which banks are willing to provide debt financing are tougher than have been seen in a long time. Most banks were exposed not only to subprime mortgage loans, but also to different layers of securities and derivatives backed by these subprime mortgages that are now standing still in an illiquid market, and the banks holding them are unsure of what their value actually is today. The major criteria that banks are looking at today are Banks are more likely than not to lend to buyers who are not highly leveraged and whose balance sheets reflect a sound financial position. The potential for earnings, reflected in earnings ratios, is the make-or-break factor for a deal. Banks are assuring themselves of the earnings capability of buyers in the event of an economic slowdown following 6 solid years of economic growth from 2011 to 2017. Banks are likely to take a less active role in the syndication process. Therefore, other participants in the deal may have to step up their involvement in this process. Banks are likely to demand, on average, a greater equity contribution by the buyer than was previously required to be assured of the sponsoring capacity of equity participants. What factors have led to this sizable halt in the frenzied M&A market seen until the first half of 2008? A housing-led U.S. recession that spilled over into global markets, overleveraged financial institutions, falling asset prices, equities, real estate, commodities, and resources, frozen credit markets, interbank, consumer, and business, weak consumer household balance sheets, forces of inflation versus forces of deflation, global synchronization and interconnectivity exacerbating all of these factors. The forecast for the next few years can be broadly positioned as follows. It is, and will be for some time, a buyer's market in global M&A after years of sellers calling the shots. Cash is king, and genuine post-closing synergy is queen. As Mark G. Schaefer, Citigroup's global head of M&A, said in late 2008 when forecasting the M&A marketplace in 2009, companies that have access to cash will clearly have the opportunity to buy things for what look like once-in-a-generation prices. This same mantra held true in 2014 to 2016, when many cash-rich buyers stepped up to the plate to do deals, although as of early 2017, well over $3 trillion in case reserves were still firmly on the sidelines. The conventional wisdom is that in such an environment, buyers are likely to turn to stock-for-stock deals, as this minimizes their cash outlays. But these deals are difficult to pull off because a corporate sale often triggers covenants in the seller's credit agreements, forcing debt repayment. Under normal circumstances, the buyer would refinance the debt. That has become a tough task, with the high-yield debt and investment-grade markets largely shut to new issues. The buy-and-flip model is dead, or at least hibernating, for a while, as it should be. In 2017, the focus is on deal flow with medium and long-term value creation. The window for exit strategies is narrow. Look for pockets of opportunity in growing, needed sectors, regions, and technologies. In view of this unexpected crisis situation that businesses find themselves in, the 10 key reasons for deals that are likely to take place in the coming months are as follows. 1. Mergers are the most effective and efficient way to enter a new market, add a new product line, or increase distribution reach, such as Disney's late 2009 acquisition of Marvel, which gave it access to new content, channels, and product development. Some classic examples includes Walgreens' proposed acquisition of Rite Aid for $9.4 billion in October 2015, which was later adjusted to $7 billion when some divestitures would be required to obtain antitrust approval, and then reduced to select assets when the federal government digs in its heels. Bank of America acquiring Countrywide Financial, a company that was severely hit by the subprime mortgage crisis, and Merrill Lynch as a way to offer a much broader spectrum of financial services is another example. But as of 2012, the strategic effects of these acquisitions had not yet been fully realized. Apple's 2015 acquisition of Beats Electronics from hip-hop star Dr. Dre for $3 billion was a good example of product line expansion. 2. In many cases, mergers and acquisitions are being driven by a key trend within a given industry, such as rapidly changing technology, which is driving many of the deals in high technology, fierce competition, which is driving many of the deals in the telecommunications and banking industries, changing consumer preferences, which is driving many of the deals in the food and beverage industry. The pressure to control costs, which is driving many of the deals in the healthcare industry. A reduction in demand, such as the shrinking federal defense budget, which is driving the consolidation in the aerospace and defense contractor industries. 3. Some transactions are motivated by the need to transform a firm's corporate identity, or even to be transformative for the buyer overall, where the target company may lead the buyer in a new direction or add significant new capability. In 2003, the video game company Infogrames, for example, gained instant worldwide recognition by acquiring and adopting the old but famous Atari brand. Similarly, First Union adopted the brand of acquisition target Wachovia in hopes of benefiting from Wachovia's reputation for high quality and customer service. The firm was subsequently acquired by Wells Fargo, but not rebranded. Another example of this is Google's $1.65 billion acquisition of YouTube in 2006. YouTube continues to retain its own brand. Microsoft's acquisition of LinkedIn in 2016 for $26.2 billion and Facebook's 2015 acquisition of WhatsApp for $19.5 billion and of Instagram in 2014 for $1 billion were social media industry examples of consolidation of assets, but driven by the desire to own globally recognized brands. 4. Many deals are fueled by the need to spread the risk and cost of developing new technologies, such as in the communications and aerospace industries, research into new medical discoveries, such as in the medical device and pharmaceutical industries, gaining access to new sources of energy, such as in the oil and gas exploration and drilling industries. 5. The global village has forced many companies to explore mergers and acquisitions as a means of developing an international presence and expanding their market share. This market penetration strategy is often more cost-effective than trying to build an overseas operation from scratch. 6. Many recent mergers and acquisitions have come about from the recognition that a complete product or service line may be necessary if a firm is to remain competitive or to balance seasonal or cyclical market trends. Transactions in the retail, hospitality, food and beverage, entertainment, and financial services industries have been in response to consumer demand for one-stop shopping, despite the slowdown in consumer demand overall. 7. Many deals are driven by the premise that it is less expensive to buy brand loyalty and customer relationships than it is to build them. Buyers are paying a premium for this intangible asset on the balance sheet, which is often referred to as goodwill. In today's economy, goodwill represents an asset that is very important, but that is not adequately reflected on the seller's balance sheet. Veteran buyers know that long-standing customer and other strategic relationships that will be conveyed with the deal have far greater value than machinery and inventory. 8. Some acquisitions happen as a result of competitive necessity. If the owner of a business decides to sell that business, every potential buyer realizes that its competitors may buy the target, and therefore must evaluate whether it would prefer to be the owner of the business that is for sale than to have a competitor acquire it. 9. In 2009, during the peak of the weak economy, some M&A deals were driven more by survival than by growth. In these types of transactions, companies need to merge in order to survive and cut costs efficiently. An example was the merger in July of 2009 between Towers Perrin and Watson Wyatt, or the need to refocus on the core, such as eBay's sale of Skype, or its acquisition and then subsequent spin-off of PayPal. 10. Some transactions are taking a new twist to an old page in the M&A playbook. Years ago, IBM transformed itself into a consulting-driven, value-added services business. In 2009, three similarly situated companies followed the same path, with Xerox merging with ACS, Hewlett-Packard buying EDS, and Dell Computer purchasing Perot Systems, all in an attempt to diversify and refocus on higher margin and value-added consulting and services-oriented revenue streams. In 2016, Lockheed's acquisition of Leidos for $4.6 billion was another example of this type of strategic revenue mix diversification strategy. The cyclical nature of mergers and acquisitions. Mergers and acquisitions activity is often driven by cycles, both at a macro level in the overall marketplace, reflecting such factors as the availability of capital and the state of the economy, and at a micro level, based upon where this particular buyer or seller stands in its growth plans or life cycle. Some acquiring companies are at an early stage of the cycle and may be looking for their first major deal as a platform for additional acquisitions, while others may be nearing the end of their cycle and are looking only for smaller tuck-in transactions. Other buyers may now appear to be more like sellers, since they are now in the phase of the cycle where they have digested what they have purchased and are ready to divest themselves of assets that are not a strong fit or that have failed to meet their strategic objectives. The M&A strategic cycle in some ways mimics the human digestive cycle. Plan. Acquire. Digest. Evaluate. Divest. Why bad deals happen to good people. Nobody ever plans to enter into a bad deal, but many well-intentioned entrepreneurs and business executives enter into mergers and acquisitions that they later regret. Classic mistakes include a lack of adequate planning, an overly aggressive timetable to closing, a failure to really look at possible post-closing integration problems, and, worst of all, projecting synergies to be achieved that turn out to be illusory. As is evident in the 10 key drivers just discussed above for today's deals, the underlying theme is the goal of post-closing synergy. What is synergy, and how can you be sure to get some? The key premise of synergy is that the whole will be greater than the sum of its parts. But the quest for synergy can be deceptive, especially if there is inadequate communication between buyer and seller, a situation that usually leads to a misunderstanding regarding what the buyer is really buying and what the seller is really selling. Every company says that it wants synergy when doing a deal, but few take the time to develop a transactional team, draw up a joint mission statement of the objectives of the deal, or solve post-closing operating or financial problems on a timely basis. We must work hard to improve M&A failures to create post-closing value rates estimated as high as 80%. Why do buyers buy, and why do sellers sell? In chapters 2 and 3, we'll take a look at the basic reasons why a buyer buys and a seller sells in the context of a merger or acquisition. The basic reasons are the same even in crunch times such as these, although the benefits that buyers and sellers get out of deals have changed to a notable extent. The goal here is twofold. One, to educate you as a prospective buyer or seller on how to define your own goals and objectives, and two, to provide some insight into the motivations of the other party to the transaction, which will usually facilitate a more successful and mutually rewarding transaction. These motivations are summarized here. Common seller motivations. The desire to retire. Lack of successors. Business adversities. Inability to compete. Lack of capital to grow. Inadequate distribution system. To eliminate personal guarantees or other personal obligations. No ability to diversify. Age and health concerns. A particular amount of money is needed for estate planning. Irreconcilable conflict among owners, losing key people or key customers. Common buyer motivations, the desire to grow, opportunity to increase profits, desire to diversify, value-driven acquisition strategy, buying up competitors, using excess capital, achieving new distribution channels or efficiencies, diversifying into new products or geographic markets. Particular people, existing businesses, or assets are needed. access to new or emerging technologies, need to deploy key people or resources efficiently, strategic fit between buyer and seller's current operations. Motivations in an acquisition. For the seller, the key motivators in an acquisition, discussed in more detail in Chapter 2, usually include one or more of the following: an owner who is nearing retirement or is ready for an exit, inability to compete as an independent concern, the need or desire to obtain cost savings through economies of scale, access to the greater resources of the acquiring company. For the buyer, the key motivators in an acquisition, which will be discussed in more detail in Chapter 3, usually include one or more of the following: revenue enhancement, cost reduction, vertical and/or horizontal operational synergies or economies of scale, growth pressures from investors, underutilized resources, a desire to reduce the number of competitors, increase market share and reduce price competition, a need to gain a foothold in a new geographic market, especially if the current market is saturated, a desire to diversify into new products and services. Motivations in a merger. It is important to note that a merger is a different animal from an acquisition, and thus a different set of objectives typically emerges for both parties. To restructure the industry value chain, to respond to competitive cost pressures through economies of scale and scope, for example, the merger of Hewlett-Packard and Compaq, or the $5.5 billion purchase of BJ Services by Baker Hughes; to improve process engineering and technology; to increase the scale of production in existing product lines; to find additional uses for existing management talent; to redeploy excess capital in more profitable or complementary uses; to obtain tax benefits. In a classic merger, there is no buyer or seller, although one party may be quarterbacking the transaction or have initiated the discussion. Therefore, the culture and spirit of the negotiations are different from those for an acquisition. In a merger, data gathering and due diligence are two-way and mutual, with each party positioning its contribution to the post-merger entity to justify its respective equity share, management, and control of the new company. Before turning to the details of structuring and negotiating these complex transactions, let's take a look at the individual perspective of both buyer and seller in Chapters 2 and 3. An understanding of each party's goals and objectives is critical to understanding the overall dynamics of the transaction. Chapter 2. Preparing for the Dance. The Seller's Perspective. Some time ago, two houses in my neighborhood went up for sale. The sellers took very different approaches to preparing for the transactions. One couple, who were nearing retirement, began the process almost 2 years prior. Every weekend, they would work on a different part of the house or the garden, taking steps to increase the value and hence raise the ultimate selling price. The proceeds would represent the bulk of their retirement nest egg, and every dollar of value was critical. Naturally, there were certain items that could not be specifically addressed, such as new wallpaper and paint, because they did not know the needs and wants of the possible buyer. In such cases, they took steps to make the rooms more generic, so as to appeal to the varying tastes of prospective buyers. The other couple, in their mid-30s with three young children, seemed to have started preparing about 1 week before the first prospective buyer arrived. They were on their way to their next home, and although the selling price mattered, it really affected only the size of their next mortgage. In fact, with three wild and destructive kids, it seemed that they were taking steps to decrease the value of the house on a weekly basis. Clearly, their approach to the buyer was, take it as is, and perhaps it will meet your needs. Prospective buyers came into the transaction knowing that a lot of time, care, and attention would need to go into the house after the closing. In many ways, these two approaches mirror the attitudes of sellers of businesses. Some companies become available for sale only after years of planning and preparation, with the sellers laying the groundwork for maximizing value. These sellers take the time to anticipate the needs and wants of different types of buyers, yet they realize that some items must be kept plain vanilla, because each buyer will have different objectives and motivations. Other companies become available for sale because of boredom on the part of the founding entrepreneur, or competitive or financial issues that may have appeared only recently. Although each circumstance will be different, these sellers simply may not want to make the significant capital investments necessary to continue operations. Or the industry may have become less profitable, or there may be irreconcilable shareholder or management disputes driving the transaction. In these cases, the buyer is likely to be purchasing a fixer-upper, and the price and valuation will be negotiated accordingly. In rare cases, a hasty decision to sell may be made for positive reasons, such as an industry being perceived as hot by the financial markets, thereby creating an ability to sell at an increased price for a limited time. Or a competing business opportunity may have been presented, and the company needs to diversify its assets in order to pursue that opportunity. There are many reasons why the owners of a business may consider selling it, the most obvious of which is that businesses, like any asset, are valuable. As with many things of value, there is a market for the trade of companies, a market where people with different expectations for the future will value the same company differently, thus enabling a buyer and seller to come to a mutually agreeable trade. Some of the common reasons why companies are sold include retirement, the owner plans to retire. Undercapitalization, a significant infusion of cash is required to take the business to the next level. Partner dispute or business divorce, a partner wants or needs to be cashed out because of a dispute or the unwinding of the business. Risk reduction, the owner wants to reduce risk from personal guarantees or liabilities. Death or illness, an owner or partner has a serious health issue. Poor management, the owner does not have the skills to manage the business. New business idea, the owner is ready to move on to the next idea or opportunity. Glass ceiling, the owner has taken the growth and development of the business as far as it can go without the resources and platform offered by a much larger entity. Burnout. Running a business full-time can be very demanding, and not everyone can sustain these pressures for a long period of time. Relocation. Some businesses are tied to specific locations and do not relocate well. Lack of bench strength. The founder or leader is very dynamic, but has failed to groom an effective management team or heir apparent, or even an effective board of directors or advisory board. Serial entrepreneurship. Some entrepreneurs are well qualified to build businesses to a certain level, but then prefer to sell them and use the proceeds to build other businesses, rather than take the existing company to the next level, which may require a skill set or degree of patience that they lack. Inadequate distribution system. Channels are expensive to build. It is much easier to leverage a pre-established distribution system. No ability to diversify. The wealth of the owner may be exclusively tied up in the business, creating substantial personal financial risk. Estate planning. When there is no family member as a successor, a business often needs to be sold for estate planning purposes. Personnel. Key people or key customers have been lost, and the business needs new management to continue operations. Regardless of the seller's specific motivations or timetable, an exit strategy and plan of action are critical to protect the value of the business. This process is outlined here. There is usually a direct correlation between the amount of time a seller spends preparing for the transaction and the price ultimately paid for the business. The selling process and the seller's decisional path. Reaching the decision to sell. 1. Understanding your motivations and objectives. 2. Building the foundation for value. 3. timing, and market factors. Getting the house in order. 1. Assembling your advisory team. 2. Legal audit and housekeeping. 3. Identifying and inventorying your tangible and intangible assets. 4. Establishing preliminary valuation ranges. 5. Preparing the offering memorandum. 6. Estate and exit planning. Marketing strategy. 1. Targeting qualified buyers. 2. Use of third-party intermediaries. 3.